7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We are joined today by 7BR member Rose Harvey Sullivan, and also by Kate Lill from the Prisoner's Advice Service. They join me today to talk about fathers in prison who want contact with their children and the guide that they have written to assist those in such a situation. Rose has a mixed family and civil practice. She specialises in representing vulnerable clients in family law, inquests, the court of protection, clinical negligence and personal injury claims. Prior to coming to the bar, Rose worked for the German government in respect of prison reform in Bangladesh. She continues to be interested in and committed to prison reform here in the UK. Kate is a lawyer at the Prisoner's Advice Service and specialises in representing women in prison. As part of her holistic approach to working with female prisoners, she's the only one at PASS who provides family law advice alongside her specialisms of prison and public law. With many women in prison having suffered significant trauma throughout their life, Kate is experienced at advising and representing vulnerable clients on complex legal issues in a manner that is sensitive to each individual and their specific needs. Rose, Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Rhys. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, hi, Rhys. Thanks.
So, Kate, welcome to the podcast. Before we begin today's discussion, perhaps you could just tell us a bit about your role at PASS.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm the women prisoners caseworker, and I provide free legal advice and representation to women in prison across England and Wales. And women in prison are predominantly victims of trauma. They've experienced trauma throughout their life and adverse childhood experiences, abuse in adult life too. And so have different experiences and needs to men in prison. So they require specialist assistance, which is why we have my particular role. And we have decided to adopt a holistic approach to working with women and expanded our normal practice of prison law and public law to include family advice too. So unfortunately, this service is only available for women at the moment, not for men, but there's certainly demand for it. There just aren't the resources, unfortunately, at present.
And sort of more widely, I know you've touched upon it just now, but what are the aims and how does PASS carry out its work?
Right, well, we are an independent legal charity and we were founded in 1991. We were set up by a number of social justice organisations, including people like the Howard League for Penal Reform, to respond to an increasing demand from prisoners for legal advice. That's when prison law sort of started to develop. And we provide free expert legal advice and representation to any adult in prison in England, in Wales, about prison law matters and including the application of the prison rules. We're the only organisation that actually do this type of work. So it's quite unique. And we do this in a number of ways. Prisoners can write to us and we can respond to their letters. We have an advice line that runs 3 days a week and one evening a week, where individuals can just call us up and ask for advice on prison law matters. We now actually have a free phone number for women as well on a Tuesday morning, which is fantastic. We have self-help toolkits and info sheets, which we send to prisoners to try and help them understand their rights and advocate for themselves. And then we also take legal action as well on behalf of individuals, but also sometimes ourselves. So we have, in our most recent judicial review, actually managed to challenge the legal aid cuts that were brought in under LASPO. I would say our aim is really to ensure that prisoners have access to free specialist advice so they can understand their rights and advocate for themselves, particularly where funding isn't available, which is a massive issue in this area. And where we can, we challenge law, policy and practice to help improve treatment for prisoners as well.
So a lot of important work is going on over at PASS. Rose, if we just turn to you briefly, now we all know that you're a member at 7BR and that you're a barrister, but what is it that you do when it sort of touches on this area of law?
Well, Rhys, as you touched on in the introduction, one of the areas of law I do is child law. Broadly, there are two types of child law, sort of public law where the state is involved and private law where there are disputes between parents or carers for the children. The most common one of that second type, where there are disputes between parents, is about contact and where a child should live with which parent or carer and how much contact the other parent should have. And that's one area that I have quite a substantial practice in. It's relevant to the work that PASS does because often fathers who are in prison, and in fact, anybody who's in prison doesn't have much contact with their child or would like different or more contact with their child or children. And so that's sort of where the overlap really starts. But I ended up becoming involved with PASS because I used to work in prison reform, and I basically contacted them out of the blue to ask if there was anything I could do to help or contribute. And they said that they get a lot of requests from men in prison asking how they can get more contact with their children. And so having one of the self-help toolkits that Kate's already referred to on that topic would be quite useful to them. So we decided to go ahead and write one, basically.
So Kate Rose has mentioned contact between fathers and children. Could you just perhaps give a bit of a background to male prisoners and how that works with their connection with their children?
Yes, of course. I mean, as Rose said, we do get a lot of requests for advice about how fathers can have contact with their children or different types of contact with their children whilst they're in prison. I think the most recent report in 2019 said there was over 300,000 children a year affected by some sort of parental imprisonment. You know, and that's a very high number and much greater than had previously been estimated. And I think the issue really starts in the criminal courts when sentencing happens. You know, a child's right to private and family life is often not really considered, despite case law saying that it should be. And the criminal courts don't seem to really understand the realities of daily life in prison and the obstacles that are in place when you're in prison for preventing or making contact more difficult. So when a father does go to prison, it's very common for them to have difficulties with the contact with their children. And that's for lots of different reasons. Often it's because they are housed in a prison that is hundreds of miles away from their child, and the family cannot take the child to see the parent because of cost and distance. Sometimes the care of the child prevents contact with the father. Sometimes it can even be the prison preventing contact between father and child. But whatever the reason it is, there is a significant impact on everyone involved in that situation. And unfortunately, there's little assistance available for men who want contact with their kids.
So you've touched upon sort of the impact of the father being in prison that it has on the child. So why is it important for prisoners, I guess both men and women, to maintain contact with their children?
Well, predominantly to reduce the negative impact of the parent's detention on everyone involved. So there's an impact on the father, impact on the child, and also the family as a whole. And it can result in the whole family network breaking down. There's an impact on father's well-being, obviously, and in turn, this makes it harder for them to engage really in custody. But the worst impact is on the child. So the imprisonment of a parent is one of 10 adverse childhood experiences known to have a significant negative impact on a child's long-term health and well-being, school attainment, and later life experiences. So they are more likely to engage with criminal activity, for example, and more likely to experience violence. It's essentially a trauma that happens to them, and its impact is far-reaching and long-lasting, unfortunately. And I think it's important, particularly for the man involved, because actually maintaining family ties can aid reintegration into the community following release from prison, and is known to reduce reoffending and intergenerational offending as well, and help with a reduction in difficulties with employment, accommodation, alcohol and drugs, any of those sort of adverse effects of being incarcerated. And it can make it easier for them to cope in the community once they're released, if they have that support from their family and their kids in particular. I think what's concerning, though, is that the Ministry of Justice are aware of this. The Pharma report highlighted the importance of family contact. There is now even a strengthening prisoners' family ties policy framework, which all prisons are supposed to adopt. And that came into force in January 2019. But it doesn't seem to have actually sort of been reflected in practice, with it being a priority. And I think now it's even more of an issue because of the pandemic, where fathers, mothers, whoever is in prison could quite possibly have not had contact, physical contact, with their children for over a year. And that's going to make it even more difficult for them to rebuild those ties going forward.
And the toolkit that has been provided that both Rose and you, Kate, have contributed to, is that something that will help address these sorts of concerns that you've raised?
We hope so. It explains how fathers can engage with their children and make contact with them through a number of different ways. And as I said previously, there's very little assistance in this area. There's very, very little family law advice out there for free. And unfortunately, even less for men. And a toolkit like this will actually provide them with the information so that they can advocate for themselves and hopefully be able to engage in contact with their kids.
Now, Rose, you mentioned that you were working in prison reform prior to being involved with PASS. How did you get into this? What interested you in this particular topic?
Well, as I say, one of my practice areas is child law, and it was something that PASS highlighted as an area that they felt they could do with some additional input on. So it was a sort of happy coincidence in that sense. But it was something that I was really interested in, not only because of my experience working in prison reform, but actually because of a particular client that I have had almost since I was training, actually. 2015 is when I started representing him. I'm still representing him now, who's an individual who has a conviction for murder, has two children, and has since 2015 been involved in sort of protracted contact proceedings in respect of the children. And the lack of support that has been available to him, including upon release and in the community, is really quite stunning. And so the difficulties that he's encountered, I think, have made it very clear to me on a personal level that this is really harmful for parents who are in these situations and for the children involved.
So what sorts of contact are available for prisoners with their children?
Well, it ranges from indirect contact, which is where it's not necessarily face-to-face, to contact taking place within the prison itself. And it's worth noting that the environment in which contact takes place for children in prisons has improved significantly over the last few years. It's not the same kind of austere stereotype that we might imagine when we first think of a child going into a prison environment. Obviously, it's not the same as being able to have contact in the home, but there are improvements in terms of things like games or books or toys that are there for children to play with, and making the environment more child friendly with posters or, you know, decorations, things like that, to make it just seem a little bit happier and friendlier for them. In terms of indirect contact options, they include things like being able to have phone calls, which of course can be accommodated. And there is a move to have more in-cell telephones. So that hopefully will be something that's more viable. But also things like being able to record things for your children and send it out to them to listen to. So there's a fantastic charity called Storybook Dads, which supports prisoners in writing short stories or poems or songs for their children, and then recording them and sending them out on audio so that the child can listen to their dad's voice, which is a really lovely way of connecting and staying in touch. So there are various different creative options. And I think we just have to be open-minded about keeping people in touch, despite the obvious difficulties that being in prison can present. So what we've done in the toolkit is listed quite a few of those options so that men are aware of what is available to them and what might, then they can think about what might suit them and their children best, and also what the child's parent, other parent, is willing to accommodate or work with, really.
You've touched upon briefly just there some of the things that the toolkit could offer, but could you just maybe give us a bit more of an understanding as to what it does overall offer for prisoners?
So we've designed the toolkit to be a really practical guide for prisoners. Unfortunately, they're going to have to make any application to the court themselves in most circumstances. Most people won't be eligible for things like legal aid. But we set out the sort of basic steps that they'll need to consider. The first of those is whether they have parental responsibility or not, which is the responsibility and rights that come with being a parent. Usually that comes through being named on the child's birth certificate. Now, some fathers aren't always named on their children's birth certificates. So there's sometimes a hurdle that we have to cross at that early stage in terms of getting those rights in the first place. We then touch on ways in which prisoners might be able to sort out contact with their children without having to go to court. It goes without saying that, of course, it's always better for everybody, really, if things can be agreed on or compromised, because it means that there's less acrimony, there's less falling out, and usually it means that it's a better basis for people to build a relationship going forward. So we try and set out ways that they might be able to try and agree, suggesting things like mediation or ways in which they might be able to communicate better with the child's carer or other parent. And then we touch on the kinds of applications that fathers might need to make to court if they can't resolve things another way. And the main one of those is a Section 8 child arrangements order, which is the standard application for gaining contact with a child. And we kind of strip it back to the basics in terms of the questions that the judge is going to ask and how a judge will frame or look at the question of what's in the child's best interests and what things they consider to do that. But we also, sort of using very straightforward language, get into the nitty-gritty in terms of the fee that they might have to pay, how you can apply for a waiver for that, and things like which form you actually need to get from the court in order to fill it in, because it might seem straightforward to you or me that we could Google that to find the relevant form. But of course, many prisoners don't have access to the internet, or at least ready access to the internet. So it's about those kinds of common sense aspects that they need to have access to that information in some form or another. So the guide explains those bits as well.
And where will this toolkit be distributed? How can people sort of get their hands on it?
Well, it's not so much a question of people getting their hands on it as it being sort of formally sent out, but it's being sent, I understand, to every prison in England and Wales that houses male prisoners. So we've managed to get a really good reach in terms of accessibility. We've had sponsorship both from Matrix Chambers and from our own chambers, 7BR, to make that possible, to fund the printing and the distribution of it. So we're really, really grateful to both of those organisations for what they've been able to contribute. So as I say, it should be going out. It's being launched in mid-June, I think. We're having a launch event on the 10th of June, which is going to be a remote event at 5 o'clock, I think. So it should be free for people to join if they want to learn a little bit about this area and to hear more from either myself or Kate. And I believe also we'll be having at the launch event Chris Atkins, who is a writer who spent some time in Wandsworth Prison. He was sentenced to 5 years for fraud several years ago, and he's written a book about his experience. He was a film producer and documentary maker before he went into prison. So he has been able to use the experience to kind of shine a light on what's happening. And so he's done a foreword for the guide. So he'll be at the launch event as well and be talking about his experiences, which should be really, really interesting.
That's great. Kate, just finally, where can people find out more about PASS or working with them?
Well, I would like to think that PAS is well known through the prison estate, but I'm constantly surprised at how few people do know about us. Our information should really be available in all prisons in England and Wales. There should be posters and leaflets so that individuals can access information about us. The library is often a good source. The library should all have information about PAS and also copies of our toolkits. They also have copies, or should have copies, of prison service instructions and frameworks, the things that prisoners can use to essentially advocate for their rights. They can contact us either by letter, by phone, by email. That is kind of available-ish now for prisoners in some parts of the estate. And we can provide information, and details to anyone who wants to contact us either through you or by them going to our website. I'd just like to add, though, I'd like to echo what Rose has said in her thanks for Matrix and 7BR in making this toolkit actually possible. Because without the funding, we wouldn't be able to do it. And it's things like this, it's generosity from people like Matrix and 7BR, which make things better for prisoners in the long run, really, because they're often unfortunately, a forgotten cohort in society. So thanks very much. If someone's not in prison and they want to contact us either because they want more information or actually they're interested in doing something like you have, Rose, which has been wonderful, they can go to our website, which is prisonersadvice.org.uk, And we've got an email address and a telephone number there, which they could call or email us on, and basically just explain why they're contacting us, what they're interested in, how they think they might be able to help. And I suspect our director, Lubia, will be back at them incredibly quickly, accepting their wonderful offer of assistance. Because, as I said before, we rely on other people's generosity, really, to help us do our job. And the last year has been quite difficult for us because we rely heavily on volunteers and we haven't been able to this year. So any assistance we could get would be absolutely wonderful and greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you, Rose. Thank you, Kate. It's been a pleasure discussing this with you today.
Thanks very much, Reese.
Thanks, Reese.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Part Heard. To find more episodes like this and more from Rose, you can find our podcast on all major streaming platforms such as Apple Music and Spotify. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.